Hello, and welcome to the Digitools in a Cruel World podcast, brought to you by the Digital Disruptors, the show that brings you news, insights, and general gossip in the accounting tech space. My name is Ryan Piercy, and unfortunately, I am not joined by Indy and John today. But don't fret, you still get to hear from them. We just couldn't manage to get all of us in front of the mic together for this episode. So there may be less banter, but don't worry, we still have a healthy dose of insights, and the banter will definitely be back next show. Probably with discussions on peanut butter and love honey, to be honest. Now, instead of providing app news this week, John and I do a deep dive into payroll bureau software. It's covered in our new Digital Digest section. But before that, John and Indy did manage to catch up with an interesting guest for an interview. I'll leave you with them.
I'm delighted to welcome Sam O'Connor to the pod. I've been wanting to get him on ever since we shared a stage at Accountex earlier this year, and must admit that in the 6 months or so that's probably passed in that time, quite a lot has changed, I think it's fair to say. So Sam, welcome to the pod. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me, John. And great to be back on the stage, if it's a metaphorical one that's done.
We'll take the proverbial stage every day. And let's get straight into it, right? Your name is familiar with the Neobank coconut. Tell us a little bit more about that story.
Sure. So I actually started life at PwC as an auditor and qualified as an accountant. And after 3 years and 8 months there, I decided to leave with my original coconut co-founder, actually, Adam, who I met at PwC, and start a company called ProConfirm, which went on to be acquired by Confirmation.com, which some accountants will probably know about. And I know you know about, John, we discussed it on the stage, which is now part of Thomson Reuters. And after a couple of years leading the European office based in London for Confirmation.com, set up Coconut. And Coconut was really a development of my passion for trying to solve problems for businesses. And the original idea behind Coconut was that we would bring together the banking and accounting elements of running a self-employed or a micro business to help business owners manage their finance more efficiently.
Was that a particular niche that you focused in on because of personal experience, or was that just because you spotted an opportunity in the market?
So the original thinking behind it was that making tax digital was on the horizon. And we knew that it was imminent for self-employed people at the time, because it was slated for 2018. We knew that VAT and corporation tax were also planned. And so seeing the innovation coming through with the neobanks such as Monzo, Revolut in the consumer space, and there was some really interesting stuff happening. Real-time notifications when you tapped your card on a point-of-sale machine, which feels very normal to us now, but actually at the time it was quite surprisingly fun and exciting. And we thought that actually there's something really interesting that we could do to figure out if you can take a transaction all the way through from the point of sale through to some kind of set of accounts or even a tax return, and really help businesses to take some of the manual work out of day-to-day bookkeeping by combining this real-time banking experience with the accounting and tax software. And so that's where the original idea came from.
And why did you feel that kind of needed to be fixed? Because obviously for anyone in this world that does bookkeeping or is familiar with cloud accounting, obviously you've got Xero, QuickBooks, FreeAgent, a whole host of others out there, all with bank feeds of some description. But why did you feel that was a particular need that was still needing to be fixed?
Open banking was very much in its infancy at the time. And bank feeds, albeit great when they worked, didn't really work particularly well. And in addition, when we were thinking about the types of businesses that we wanted to work with, which were very much the micro and small, and being accountants ourselves and using tools like Xero and QuickBooks, the level of complexity in those products is quite high, and you need a level of financial knowledge to use them properly, to set up the chart of accounts, to understand debits and credits. And as accountants will know, you don't really want clients to be meddling with that stuff. And so we thought, actually, given the backdrop that Making Tax Digital is coming, and it's probably going to force a much larger group of small, micro, less sophisticated businesses onto the digital platforms, it was an opportunity to create something that is much simpler, that really addressed the pain points of those customers in terms of being able to onboard quickly, being able to separate business from personal finances, and then ultimately having quite an automated experience when it came to the process of submitting tax or even just working with an accountant. And yeah. So it's really about simplicity, basically.
Traditional banking finance in the UK is free effectively, although obviously there are some costs for businesses. And then combine that with a bookkeeping product in the background, which is not necessarily free. Was there a challenge trying to position that? Because the sole traders, they're not always that keen to part with cash, are they, when it comes to product?
Yeah, I think that is a genuine problem. So I think whilst the product proposition was hugely valuable to the people that wanted to use it, what I learned from doing that was that actually there's huge power in combining banking products with software products that are going to save businesses time. And bringing those things together can create huge time savings, create the ability for founders and entrepreneurs to understand their businesses better and therefore make better decisions and grow. And so whilst there was value there, actually, I don't think the pain that micro businesses and self-employed people experience in terms of managing finances is necessarily big enough to lure them into a product like that.
MTD, every accountant's favorite acronym at the moment, and it's become something of a political football as well now. Was the success or failure of Coconut based on the premise that MTD was going to happen? And is that maybe a lesson to be learned as well? Or is that too harsh an assessment?
Yeah, so the journey with Coconut was an interesting one. And where it's ended up is that we were most definitely impacted by the delay of MTD. So we launched Coconut with a business current account at the start of it, and then we built the software on top. And then in 2020, we'd been through various different challenges, as all startups do. But one of the big things that shifted in the market was that the Banking Competition Remedies Fund started to give quite big grants to other business banking providers such as Tide and Starling. And it became very challenging to acquire business current accounts in the market. And we ended up pivoting away from business current accounts with Coconut, realizing that we had really good software, which accountants were using to serve their self-employed people and their small businesses, and they wanted to continue to do that. So we stopped opening current accounts and we moved completely to a software-based product for accountants to support with the transition to MTD ITSA. And so last year, we were growing at probably 50% month on month in terms of software subscriptions in the run-up to the end of the year when accountants were preparing for the next tax year. And 4 days after we had some funding committed, and about 2 weeks after we'd integrated with the Making Tax Digital quarterly submissions with the HMRC APIs, the MTD ITSA mandate was delayed by 2 years. And that definitely, you know, put us into a situation where we needed to adjust course because we had just raised some funding, which was based on a plan that was dependent on MTD ITSA. And so it became the natural point to find a partner to work with. And we ended up merging Coconut with a company called Pennine Ventures, and they own Go Simple Tax. And it was quite a neat situation because they have the filing piece, we had the bookkeeping piece, and putting them together was a really good outcome for customers, but also means that they can operate as a profitable business if MTD comes. When MTD comes, they'll be ready to really serve those customers properly.
What can you take forward into the things that you're doing with OutNorth?
We had a huge amount of success at varying times with Coconut. So we grew the product to 26,000 business current accounts before ultimately deciding that wasn't our route. And then we pivoted to a subscription-based product, which made the whole thing a lot simpler. And there's a huge amount of value there. Accountants love it. Customers love it, and the software works incredibly well. The bits that we wanted to add to it were really on the filing side of things. And so the combined Go Simple Tax Coconut product actually fits very well within that vision. And so I expect that it will continue to be successful and do a great thing. But I think for me, the really interesting piece of what I did there was the banking side of things and how you can combine banking as a very high utility product with software to ultimately create really, really good outcomes for businesses. And so when Coconut came to that natural inflection point, I got in touch with Rishi and Joel at Oak North, who I've watched from afar and seen how successful they've been in what they do. And Oak North has been one of my favorite fintech businesses for years. And there's a few reasons for that. But really, what I really love about it is it's entrepreneurial at its core. Rishi and Joel started it because they are entrepreneurs and they had challenges when they were growing their successful business and couldn't get lending. It's very targeted, right? And I think that focus is absolutely critical to any business, any successful business. And the focus for Oak North is on serving that, what we call the missing middle, which is 1 to 100 million turnover businesses. We ultimately want to help them to thrive and to grow. And we think they've been underserved by other banks. And so that was another thing that really aligned with my values. And then, of course, the opportunity to launch this new product where it combines the banking aspects with the technology aspects aligned very closely with my experience and my passions. So made the decision quite...
That missing middle of 1 to 100 million still feels like a hugely broad range of businesses. And there are some other banks, both new and old, who are looking to target a section of the market. So how does Oak North differentiate itself?
The reasons for targeting that range, it represents 1% of SMEs. And what's interesting about the group is because with the micro, there's a very high volume of them. But whilst this is 1% by volume, that group is 22% of GDP and 8% of employment. This is really going back to the reasons that Rishi and Joel started Oak North in the first place. And it was the experience that they had when they were in the missing middle as a business. So they found that they weren't able to get lending. And so they started Oak North to lend to this group. And what's been so interesting about that journey is you think about them just going in and into a very commoditized market, right? Oh, they're going to do loans to businesses, which a lot of banks were doing at the time. And what they did was that was very smart. And they said, actually, we had an experience that we know other businesses will be experiencing. How do we think very closely about what the customer need is and then produce a product that serves that customer need? And as a bank, we're now in the top 1% of commercial lenders globally. We've lent 10 billion out to businesses over 8 years. And the reasons for that are we think very carefully about needs. And so what do these customers need? It's transparency through the decision process. It's speed to get funding. A deep understanding of the specifics of those businesses, right? If you take hotels, bars, pizza restaurants, a traditional bank might put them all into hospitality and leisure and say, these are the macroeconomic factors that are affecting hospitality and leisure. But if you look at the last 5 years, COVID impacted pizza restaurants very differently to hotels, for instance. The macro environment is impacting bars very differently to other types of businesses in hospitality and leisure. And so having that deep analytical view and being able to assess based on individual businesses is really compelling. And so these things ladder up to a customer experience that's fundamentally different to the other banks. And by the way, not cheaper. And customers come back because of that experience. So what we are doing here is we're applying that same thinking and that same customer approach to how we create this product. It didn't quite answer your question specifically, and I know I've gone on for a little while, but maybe, yeah, I can talk a bit more specifically as well about about what we're doing.
Maybe you're right. Maybe that's the lead in to trying to figure out exactly what it is that you're doing with Oak North, where you think the opportunity is, and again, how it sets you apart from maybe the competition that's out there.
My role here is to launch our current account and our cards product and do that in a way that really serves the most acute needs of the customers that we want to work with. And partly that is providing that product, but partly it's also bringing to bear the complete kind of picture of Oak North and how we can support businesses to achieve their ambitions. Having seen that around 85% of businesses in our target audience bank with large traditional banks who aren't really passing on interest rates to customers. And so the first thing we wanted to do is pass on those interest rates. And so the first product that we've launched is an earned vault that pays out interest. And then what we want to do beyond that is really start to think about the customer problems. And the way that we're differentiating is we've seen that when customers get to 1 million in revenue and beyond, they start to get a bit more complex in their corporate structures, in their requirements around what they need. And there are things that other banks don't understand. So it's at that point they seem to graduate from the neobanks, which tend to focus more on the micro. And I think that is a function of them starting with consumer
and, so
and building out from there.
Do you think for the accountants that will be listening to this, probably one of the biggest frustrations is where if you've got a relationship with Starling or Revolut or whoever it is, as soon as you add some complexity like a holding company or a subsidiary or something overseas, that then becomes a real challenge to bank with those neobanks. So is that something that you guys would be able to solve or can solve now?
That's exactly right. So there are some really basic things like opening a new SPV, changing the structure, complex ownership structures and things like that. And those are things that we've become incredibly good at because of the types of businesses that we lend to. And we want to bring that experience to bear in providing a banking partner that you can work with as you go through those layers of complexity, that you feel safe with, that you're not going to get debanked from because they don't understand.
Sorry to interrupt. Is there any types of customers or types of organizations that you won't touch? Because equally, that's sometimes a challenge. So construction historically has been difficult to bank. Charities sometimes are difficult to bank and things like that.
As with any product, we're launching quite early, which is why we've only launched our own proposition so far. It's got a current account connected to it. And so we are limiting the scope of businesses that we work with to limited companies. In terms of industry segments, construction is one that we want to work with. We understand property and adjacent industries very well, and we do plan to work with construction businesses. The property is another really interesting segment where businesses are often passed from pillar to post when they try and deal with the larger banks, particularly if they're trying to open an SPV or do a large payment or anything like that. And those are the kind of problems that we want to solve too. And the way that we're doing that is not only getting the basics right, every customer will have a personal relationship with what we call an Oak North business partner, which will be your personal liaison. And they can do things like solve problems for you in the moment, or if you want to take out a loan, to do a management buyout, to invest in property, connect you up with the right people within the bank. And then the other elements of where we're differentiating is, and this is where kind of my experience of building software comes in, is really diving into the challenges that businesses like this face day to day, whether it's those large payments, whether it's managing spend across multiple entities, managing employee cards, those kind of things, and bringing that technology to solve the most acute, what we call jobs to be done, that these businesses face.
And I'm glad you mentioned the technology word, because when we did share a stage all that time ago, we did get terribly geeky about some of the things that you wanted to try. Tell us a little bit more about some of the technology you think you can bring to bear.
Whilst we're early today, we've got a highly talented team that is building out this technology as we speak, and we will continue to make progress on that. So to give you a flavor of the type of things that we want to solve, and these are very much missing middle problems, right? They're not micro problems. earn is about making sure that your money is working hard for you when you're not working hard. And the first version of earn is an easy access savings vault where you can put your money into the current account and then move it over to earn and get it out within one business day. And that's great. It starts paying interest. But what we want with earn is we want to do more in terms of different vaults to put money away for longer periods of time to earn more interest, and then even get as far as investment accounts like money market accounts, but then layer on top things like automated sweeps and rules that you might want to make sure that you're maximizing the income on that idle cash. And in doing so, bringing the tools that you might get as a corporate in terms of treasury management, which I know that if you go over 100 million in revenue, you might be actually employing someone to do that, but bringing those tools down to the missing middle with that technology and with our core banking license capabilities that we can build on top of. The next concept, just to run through, is spend, which is really cool. So spend is about visibility and control of incoming and outgoing transactions through not just one entity, but through a group eventually. And so there's some really cool technologies that have been developed over the last 10 years, open banking being one of them, but also virtual cards. Physical cards are a lot easier to manage as well. And so bringing all of those together, we want the ability to issue virtual cards for particular items of spend. Let's say you're buying a large piece of machinery and you want to lock down one virtual card to a large transaction with a specific merchant to make it safer, and then have it automatically reconciled to a budget. That's the kind of thing that spend might do. With employee cards, you want to be able to issue employee cards and cancel them quickly when employees leave. And so these are the kind of things that we want to do within spend. And then we have international payments and FX management, and you can imagine what those look like. And so all of those will come together over time. And we've got a roadmap of numbers of years to create something that's really exciting.
What it feels like to me, Sam, is that you're bringing together the best of both worlds, the agile nature of the neobanks who can, you know, open up a pot of money to put some money aside for, say, a VAT bill, for example, but also bringing in some of the technologies that we're probably more familiar with, say the likes of Plio, for example, with cards. And obviously there's a plethora of payment solutions out there. Yeah, what's the strategy to achieve this?
It's an important one because you can't build all of this stuff overnight. We take the view that we want to move quickly to deliver value to customers. And there are multiple ways to do that. You can build in kind of slivers of value. You can acquire companies that do these kind of things, and you can partner. And so those are three tactics that you can employ to deliver value faster. I think for the time being, we are focused on doing the foundations or serving the pipes of banking really effectively. And that is very much a build situation for us. And so we are focused on that for the time being. But as we progress, talk to more customers, understand the needs, understand where we can differentiate by building it ourselves, we'll go down that road, but also talking to all sorts of other businesses to see what's out there.
So what does success look like for you, you know, personally, and also from an out north point of view? Is it that 1 billion valuation? Is it IPO? Is it exit by some other means?
So in terms of what success looks like, for me personally, I really love solving really crunchy problems for businesses, because I think that has a real impact on how business owners and entrepreneurs can run their business. And that overall has an impact on the economy, on employment, and really starting to permeate businesses with new technology, a force for good.
But that has to be tangible, though, doesn't it, Sam? Everyone can say they want to improve the way that businesses operate or improve the technology, the systems they use, but you do need to actually have something tangible to deliver that, don't you?
Yes, you do. And I think that the tangible things that I found to be exciting is this convergence between banking as a platform that everyone has to use, everyone's got to do payments, and the technology that sits on top. And the thing that I've seen very clearly is that for the type of business that we're serving at Oak North. Traditional banks haven't really improved their technology for a very long time. And so there's an opportunity there to take the new technology and improve the experience for them. So I think for us, success looks like how do we solve the biggest problems for customers and not just deliver a transaction banking product that enables them to save time, which is what a lot of technology products do. We want to help them make more money as a business. So whilst we may be working with them day to day on their financial challenges, actually, when it comes to a situation where they might want to invest in something new, do a management buyout or something that's going to transform the business or grow internationally, we're there for them and we can help them to do that with financing, with the banking tools, and ultimately continue that really profound impact that Oak North has had on the missing middle in terms of being able to lend £10 billion to them and enable them to grow. There are businesses that borrowed a few million off us 8 years ago and are now borrowing 10 times that amount. There are property investors and developers who have significantly grown their portfolios. And this is just an opportunity to expand the reach and the ability to serve more customers.
One of the biggest frustrations with traditional banking is decision-making is typically slow. You want to borrow £10 million tomorrow and you can't really do it. And that's where your banks in particular have been so successful at picking up new business, because you can open a bank account in minutes and you may well be able to get a small overdraft connected to it. Now, clearly that's different from borrowing 10 million quid. Is Oak North going to position itself as a bank that can do things at speed with a particular SLA around it? Because all banks really want to help their customers grow, expand, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality on the ground is that banking can be frustrating.
I think speed is really important. The things that I know that we can do better, we're building our technology from the ground up. And that means that we can build it specifically for the customers that we're serving. We are quick at making decisions and delivering values. That's one of the reasons why customers come to us for lending. And that's because we understand those businesses deeply, but also we make decisions quickly and we're very focused on understanding specific businesses and their problems. And then the final thing is really about the personal connection to us. And because we're focused on serving a small number of businesses very well, we're able to retain that personal connection. And that all of those three things combine into a much, much more custom and high value experience for businesses, so that we can actually support businesses to succeed rather than the situation today where they succeed in spite of the banking relationship that they have.
As an accountant, as a business advisor, quite often you're the second to last or last person to know about a client going to a bank and borrowing money for a particular project or something like that. Do you think there's an opportunity for Oak North to close that loop a little bit more in terms of making it maybe a bit easier for accountants to be engaged in that process at an earlier date?
It's a really interesting question and one that's close to my heart because of the way that we built Coconut, which was very much connected with the accountant community. And we've got over 1,000 accountant partners today, and Gavin Fell looks after those of Fluidly fame. And we're working with an expanding number of accountants. And I think at the moment, there's accountants who refer customers to us for lending deals. We're starting to see much more interest in what we're doing on the transaction banking front as well. And so I think over time, we want to build out the systems and the tools that enable accountants to work more seamlessly with their clients. And whilst we're in beta today, it's a pretty simple product. Ultimately, we want to build it with customers in mind, and we'll definitely be coming to the accountant community for feedback and to understand how we can work better to help you serve your clients.
That's a great way to wrap up the chat, and thank you so much for your time, Sam. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I wish you well with your new venture with Oak North, and let's hope we can share a stage at some point in the future.
Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, I'll see you at Accountex or whatever's coming up.
Oh, there's so many shows. It's all of them in the next 4 months or 5 months, whatever it is.
John and I recently carried out a deep dive into cloud-native payroll bureau software. What a mouthful. on our weekly webinar series, The Digital Digest. We were getting the most attention of all our webinars to date. We thought our podcast listeners may want to check it out and hear who we choose to bed, buy, or bin. If you find this insightful, please head over to our YouTube channel, which is at Digital Disruptors Digitals, and subscribe. That way you'll catch future shows. Hope you like it.
If you're anything like us as a mid-tier firm at Scrum Bland, we've been using desktop server-based systems such as Sage Line 50 for ages, but we wanted to adopt the cloud. And so we've had this hybrid solution of working in Xero Payroll and Sage 50 Payroll, which just makes it a bit challenging from a management perspective for our payroll team. But there's been a huge development in cloud-based payroll systems and bureau systems as well as that. So we want to dive into what some of those are and what you should be considering if you're looking to move over to those, and what the benefits could be. John, what are some of these cloud-based payroll systems and the bureaus that firms could be using?
We've seen an explosion of products come into the market. The ones that people will be most familiar with are Xero Payroll, QuickBooks Offer Payroll, Sage Offer Payroll. Now we've got people like BrightPay, which is well known in the marketplace, been around for a long time.
On that, John, BrightPay, I believe, announced a payroll bureau software in the cloud in April and then pulled it.
That's right. So they did launch in April. I don't think it went particularly well. There was some significant flaws, and then it was quietly withdrawn and it's been relaunched back into the market a little bit more quietly. And my understanding is it's been almost like a beta testing kind of phase now, with an expectation that a proper full launch will happen again, if you like, in the coming April. But a good sort of product with lots of legacy, if you like, positive legacy in terms of very well known and very user-friendly and stuff. You've also got products like Staffology, which is now owned by Iris, but created by Dwayne Jackson, who is the man behind Cashflow, originally serving as a payroll solution for businesses, but become more of a bureau product. And then, of course, there's Employment Hero, who obviously sponsor what we're doing and has come about through acquisition of KeyPay and the merger of their HR solution with that.
You've got PayCircle, now owned by Access, and some others in the market that may be bureaus, maybe not bureaus. You've got the likes of Pento, PayFit, and then more over in Australia and New Zealand, such as Payroo, Apogee, and then a relatively or completely brand new one over to the UK called Rippling, which I think they've only come over in the last couple of months, but changed the face of payroll and HR over in the US. So lots to consider, lots of different systems. I'm not even sure. Did we mention Citrus HR, which is one that's been integrated into Xero for ages? There's a lot of solutions out there, and there's pros and cons of different things. One thing I think you need to consider, or we will consider as we go through this, is what are you looking for? Are you looking for something that's aimed at small one-man bands? Are you looking for something that's 200 plus employees? For things that integrate with HR solutions, with payment solutions, there's lots of things to consider. But I'd say the first place you need to start is actually, is it reliable? So the number one thing, I guess, that people worry about is with payroll is reliability, because you have to turn it around quickly and it has to be exact because you're dealing with people's pay. It's not, oh, journal's gone a bit awry, we can just fix that. It can massively affect cash flow because you pay the wrong thing. Trying to get that back from employees can be very challenging. The reliability is critical. Then, as we always talk about and become more and more critical to operations, John, is UX, user experience. How easy is it to adopt, especially as generally, payroll teams are those that don't particularly like change. They like consistency. It's all about churn and getting things through. And so if you bring something in, it needs to be quick and easy to adopt. Otherwise, it's going to really put off your payroll team from working with it and engaging with it.
Yeah, and I think there's an air of familiarity, isn't there? Our payroll team certainly get very well embedded with a particular product, and they get to a point where they trust the calculations, particularly where you've got benefits being payroll that add layers of complexity that maybe aren't there in a standard payroll. And as a consequence of that, they just get used to being able to see as they input figures into the system that the number's coming out and they appear logical. But that means that they're reticent, I would suggest, to try new things or look at new things. That's why appraising what those systems are capable of is really critical.
Yeah, and bringing your team into that appraisal. We'll touch a bit on what we've done at Scrum Bland. But another key thing that I think we definitely put at a high level here was the level of support that we'd get for implementation and ongoing, especially on how quick and easy it is to get support, because payroll, you've got quick turnaround times. You need to be able to get critical support instantly. So if your support's in a different country, a different time zone, then you're not going to get that in the time frame you need. So where that support's located, how quickly, and the different methods. So if it's a ticketing system, it's going to take longer than if you just pick up a phone. So you've got to weigh all these options up.
And that transfer issue in terms of shifting from one system to another one is a real challenge, isn't it? Unless you're quite a small payroll bureau, you can't go this big bang kind of thing that we'd maybe do with a finance system where you go, we'll change at year end and we'll wait 3 months and then we'll do everything all at once with a bit of planning. With a large volume of payrolls, there's only so much time in the day that you can move lots of information, lots of sensitive information in particular as well, between one system and another, check that it's carried across correctly, that it's all right. So what happens is you tend to find that payroll transitions, for a bureau at least, tend to happen over a period of months. And then that adds its own complexity because then got the historic payroll information that's been input in the old system, which needs to be brought across, plus working out parts of your payroll bureau you move at a particular point in time. So do you start off with the most complex payrolls, for example, or do you start off with, say, those single director company payrolls, which might be relatively straightforward?
Yeah, there's a lot of consideration on that, and yeah, staggering is critical. The other thing is, obviously, from a risk perspective, it's much better to move for April. The problem is everyone wants to do that April, so trying to get support at that time is very challenging, hence why planning and doing this not instantly, but doing this over a period of time is important. So as I mentioned, Scrum Plan, we've been doing an assessment. We've got to the point where we know we need to do something to help our payroll team and to provide a better service for our clients. So we've been doing an assessment of all the payroll systems out there. We've only looked at cloud because that's our strategy. That's where all investment's going. That's where all this development's going. We're focused on that. But there are a number of areas that I want to run through that we've considered as critical from an assessment point of view. First point was, what are the number of employees we're going to be putting through there? So not just what's the total volume across our bureaus, but how many kind of single directors have we got? How many 200 plus employee businesses have we got? There's completely different functionality you need across those. So can the system work well on the small scale and the large scale? The ability to make adjustments, and so historic adjustments, right? If that needs to be done or on the fly, how easy is that to be done? If you need to roll back a year to make one single adjustment, can you just go back and change it and it automatically feeds through? Or do you have to go back and unravel every single one, which I know you have to do in some systems and it drives me mental. How much automation can you get out of it? How much can you put at the start of a year and it just churns through unless things change? And then you're into realms of integrations, aren't you, John?
Yeah, agreed. And I think we undersell the power of integrations sometimes, particularly in a larger firm, because we are departmentalized. And so the payroll information is dealt with in a department over here and the accounts information was dealt with somewhere else. And because of the sensitive nature of that payroll information, it's usually quite heavily protected in terms of the systems and the sort of the firewalls and stuff that we build around these things. So what you see in the old school way of operating is a frustration because someone in, say, the accounts team is going to email someone in the payroll team to say, can you let me have this month's payroll and the adjustments, etc.? And then you'll get something that might be either encrypted or slightly garbled or something else to because they don't want to share a lot of information. Whereas if you've got a great integration, absolutely no reason why you can't then push those between the two systems. The only question then is, how does that integration work?
Yeah.
You know, who sort of triggers that posting of the payroll? So in that example that you just gave, Ryan, if a mistake is made or a correction is required, does that integration allow for corrections to be made and then for that, say, journal to be reposted and corrected without creating more of a mess in the accounting system, which maybe the SME team or the accounts team or outsourcing team have to deal with?
Yeah, and the other thing on integrations now is how much flexibility does it allow? Because there's a drive for segmenting reporting, departments, cost centres. Does that integration allow the posting across that? And if it does that, does it do it for gross pay and employers and I and pension? Because so many just do gross pay and then you've just got a bucket of employers and I and pension costs in just a random nominal. So who's really thought about that integration? How well does it work? But as well as the finance systems, nowadays you've got obviously HMRC directly, and but you've got pension integrations, how reliable are those? And also payments. Like, it's a whole new service you can add, is the running of automation of payments for clients.
Absolutely. And I think, again, the challenge for some payroll bureaus is they may have offered, say, a payment service and maybe a VAX bureau, for example, which comes with its own levels of complexity and cost. And then maybe to turn that around and to use a payment service like, for example, Tellaroo, so it's a slightly different way of working. So you've got to look at how your internal systems and processes look, but also then you've probably got to interact slightly differently with your clients in terms of maybe funding a product like Tellaroo to get those payments into there to then be dispersed onwardly. Those really matter as well, if that kind of additional services or replacement services need to be brought in to accommodate the changes you want to make.
Definitely. The other final bits for consideration that we went through were client collaboration. the more we can collaborate with our clients on the cloud-based system where they're putting information in and we're then looking through it, means the more automation we can bring and more streamlining. And how easy is it for them to interact via the portal? Can they get the information themselves? How much can we restrict that? It's very important. UX, we've talked about so many times. And then final bit from us is that we wanted a HR integration because we were looking for our own internal payroll and HR. So that enables a whole new service you can bring in later on if you want to, even if it's just the ability to add a HR software on top and support it. But HR integration became critical to us. So I guess putting this all in a mix and looking across the various systems that we've touched on, I'll quickly summarize where we got to. So Xero, QuickBooks Online and Sage, great if you focus purely on one system, but we work across multiple different accounting systems. And a lot of businesses do now. And I say great, great as in it integrates, right? It puts the journal in. I think there's a lot of reliability issues. We, as a firm, kind of lost some faith in the Xero payroll system. It's not been developed for a long time. I know they're looking to do that in the future, but we've got to the point where is it actually delivering what we need?
Those kind of payrolls that are baked into a bookkeeping solution are for the most basic of payrolls. They're for, I don't know, a maximum of, let's say, 15, 20 people probably in terms of you might have to hop around between employee records, but also quite often they don't have some of the level of sophistication that the more established bureau products have. For example, being able to payroll benefits, being able to do other things, or if they do, they come in a little bit later down the track than maybe a proper bureau-focused payroll solution would address earlier.
Completely agree. Yeah. And yeah, we admittedly, I don't think we go to 15, 20. I think we top out between 5 and 10. But then like Citrus HR, great system, but didn't go with the scale that we wanted. Same with the new Sage cloud-based system. We needed like a certain number of employees, 200 plus. It couldn't do that at this point. We know they're building that out over time. It may get there. Brightpay, the fact that they'd pushed it into the cloud and pulled it back, it just wasn't ready for us at this point. It may get there. The desktop system's brilliant, but it's just not there for us at this point. All those Pento payroll ones we've ignored. They're not proper bureau. So we got down to Staffology, PayCircle, and Employment Hero. Those are the three that we focused on. And the main summary is that PayCircle was good, but didn't enable the amount of flexibility we needed because it was built on a one-to-one basis. So a payroll employee works with a single client, whereas our firm works very much flexibly across our clients. Staffology was also great from a payroll bureau perspective, but was releasing a lot of new functionality out over the course of this year, so 2023. So stuff that we couldn't really get to grips with. And then Employment Hero did pretty much everything we needed apart from one bit that was about backdated pay, a specific thing that we were looking at, and they were looking to bring that in anyway. And then the tipping point for us was the ability to integrate into the HR system. The Employment Hero HR system, we just love. Like, we think that's just brilliant. And so from an internal perspective and how we want to run and what we want to do with our clients longer term, we've got to the point where Employment Hero is the right fit. Now, from a pricing perspective, Employment Hero is notably more pricey at the moment than Staffology. If you're looking at it and they're close from your assessment, you'll find that Staffology is a bit more cost effective. You may want to go down that route. We're looking to go down the Employment Hero route because we're looking at best in breed and we're looking at how we make that work. As a summary point of view, if we're looking at bed, buy or bin solution here, what's our preference? I think I'm getting into bed with Employment Hero. I'm probably at the moment, realistically, sorry, Xero, I'm binning your payroll solution here. I love your products, but payroll is just not ticking the box. And who would I buy? I think from where Staffology is going, I think they've still got a lot of potential there. I think the HR solution is a little bit weak, needs a bit of work, but I'd probably end up buying them. You got any different opinions on that, John?
I totally agree with your top three. That's pretty much where we got to as well. We actually used PayCircle because we moved to that about 3.5 years ago. We reassess the market quite regularly, and Staffology and Employment Hero almost always come to the top of the list in terms of good alternative solutions. In terms of bed, buy and bin, I don't think I disagree with you. I think if Iris were willing to let Staffology go for a discounted price, definitely buy them because I do think it is a great product, just maybe lacking some of the key features that larger bureaus need. And we've had similar experiences in terms of we're fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to have some very large payrolls which are in excess of 1,000 people, and that really does limit your scope in terms of some of the solutions.
Yeah, and I think, look, the main thing that come out of this is any of these solutions, if you're on a desktop or server-based payroll system, should massively increase your automation, should reduce the amount of time you spend and enable you to scale up. So if you are on traditional systems like us, consider these and move across. We've given you our opinion. And I think that feels like a great place to wrap up this week's show.
As ever, we hope you love the show, even if this one was slightly different format. We'd be ever so grateful if you could rate and review, as those always help spread the word. And please do check out the new Digital Disruptor website at www.digital-disruptors.com. Back to the normal format next week. Ciao for now.